They're the first song you hear every morning. What is it about birds that make us all look to the skies? Take some time to listen and become possibly a birder too. I'm Lee Rayburn. Welcome to the Lee Rayburn Show, and our next guest is a birder, Dexter Patterson, joining us, co-founder of the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin, co-host of the Bird Joy podcast, and author of the book Birds of the Great Lakes. If you've got a question or a story about being a birder yourself, you can join our conversation at any time. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Dexter, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Lee.
I want to start with your story and what was it that turned you on to birds and keeps you coming back and listening and watching and trying to find that elusive one that's on your list? What made you love birds so much?
You know, I that's a great question. I tell people all the time, I always liked birds, right? I always liked them, but I never gave them the attention they deserve. So like, even as a little kid, I'd be like, blue bird, yellow bird, a red bird, a big white bird, black bird, right? But I didn't care what they were or, you know, thinking about their names or their habitats or any of that stuff. So they kind of always had my attention. My grandfather, Ed Brown, he was a birder. And he was a father of 11 kids. So you can imagine, right, Lee? You got 11 kids. You got to kind of be like... very efficient in the type of entertainment you did with your family, right? So he took them outside and they went to parks and my grandfather would tell his children, just pay attention. Mm. And that's kind of this mantra that I've carried throughout my life after learning about that, because he'd be outside with the kids and he'd say, close your eyes. What do you hear? What do you feel? Pay attention to the world around you. And that got passed on to me. And as I got older, it's funny, there's this meme out there that says, oh, you turn 30 and then all of a sudden you're like, is that a yellow rump warbler? You know, like life comes at you fast, Lee. So
it's funny because it's true though, right? That at a certain age,
so true.
you're like, these things are amazing. They're so varied, and the colors and the songs, it's like a rainbow in the skies that you never even realize until you reach a certain age.
Yeah. So I started to pay attention. And that's when my life changed. And that's when I knew, like, birds have always been in me. I mean, even as a little kid, I always had dreams of being able to fly, but I wouldn't fly like Superman. I'd actually be flapping my arms in my dreams. Like, I've always just like had this connection and didn't realize it. But now I pay attention. And I always tell people, once you start to pay attention, you cannot stop.
Yeah. It's interesting, Dexter, because for me, it started, not that I knew it at the time, with my grandfather, too, and the bird feeders that were outside the window and his little guidebook that he kept on the coffee table waiting for somebody to show up at the bird feeder and helping us all figure out who it was. But at the time, I think I was more interested in his squirrel deterrents than I was with the birds at the bird feeder. Those were a little more interesting to me and novel as well. But I think it was a few years ago when I had a robin's nest that was at a tree, and those robins, not the best at making nests, I don't think, but they were really intent on making sure that their young ones were cared for. And at times I felt like they were looking for help or assistance. Like when the mower would come by the tree, they would seem to come over to the railing on my house and chirp and chirp and chirp until I'd come outside. I felt a connection at some point with them that I haven't lost since, and I get that today. Is there something to that?
Oh, there's definitely something to that. The past two springs and summers, I've had robins actually nest under my deck. And this year, they actually did two different clutches. They hatched four, and then she laid four more. And it's funny that you say, like, when the mower comes by or you get close, they'll typically flush the nest.
Yeah.
And then they'll be nearby and they'll watch you. So that chirping, he was like, he or she, they were like, Lee, get away. That's what they were trying to tell you. Get away from my babies, you know, get away from my babies. But it's like I tell people all the time, when you actually pay attention, and you mentioned the American robin, I think this is a great example. Not only is it the state bird of Wisconsin, but I think a lot of times people are like, oh, that's just a robin.
Right.
It's not just a robin. It's a robin, right? Like, it's a robin. You know, there's nothing like when our Wisconsin winter starts to fade away and you start seeing those signs of spring, and now you're starting to see the grass showing itself. And next thing you know, that robin is hopping around in your yard, Lee, and it's doing its little head nods, and it's starting to look for it, because now they can actually get worms because the grass isn't frozen anymore. Like, when you actually sit with a bird and watch it, the American robin is one of the most beautiful birds you'll ever see, right? Like, if you actually pay attention to it and you listen to it, their songs, they're part of the thrush family, right? Like, thrushes have some of the most beautiful, beautiful songs in the world. And every morning when I get to hear those robins singing, and now I see their little ones literally hopping around in my garden and begging for food, and mom and dad are coming and feeding them. It's just this remarkable circle of life, and it really makes you appreciate the world around you. That's one of the big things I love about birds, is that environmental awareness has given me, where it really has made me realize I'm just a small piece of the puzzle, but that puzzle, we're all connected, right? We're all connected. Every bird, the trees that you mentioned that their nest was in, the water that they're drinking, we are all connected. And that's what's so beautiful. That's the stuff.
Yeah, no, you explained it perfectly, that my connection to those birds happened to do with my understanding of a connection with everything that's around me. And those birds somehow seem to be a key. And you mentioned the robin song, and I don't know if you heard my story about the summer adult male summer tanager sighting that was in my neighborhood this spring, and the birders that it brought. But they're easy to see, but they're difficult to hear because their song sounds so similar to the American robin, Dexter.
I had an immature male at a Carpenter Ridgeway Park here on the east side of Madison this year. Just a handsome little fella. Like, I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, no way you just hopped out in front of me like this. You know, people say that all the time. They're like, Dexter, what are you, some bird whisperer or something? How does this even happen to you? But it's just patience. I feel like with birds, you create your own luck. Just being outside and paying attention, that's what it is. It's not like this special magic or anything like that, you know. But I am a vibe when I'm outside.
Yeah, so that you're a bird magnet.
Yeah. I like that, Lee. Bird magnet. I like that.
Somehow, I think the role you play is how you explained it, is patience. And it brings bird joy, which is the name of your podcast. Dexter Patterson, our guest. And we're just loving on birds today. And you can join it at our conversation at any time at 1-800-642-1234. If there's something about a bird you want to know, 1-800-642-1234. Or email us, talk@wpr.org. And let's go to Susie in Manitowoc. Susie, hi.
Hi. I just walked into the room. I was watching a bird video on the computer. And so, let me tell you what I was watching. It's this bird sanctuary in India called Vantura. It is absolutely fascinating. It's a 25-minute video, but the host takes us through this, and they have thousands and thousands of birds that they're rehabilitating there. Okay. The reason for my call, I heard you were talking about robins. We have such fun every summer because we have two winterberry shrubs in our backyard, and we wait and wait and wait for those to ripen, and then the robins come, and they feast on those, and there was exponential growth in the winterberries this summer. So there were more berries than usual, so they lasted and lasted. It's pure joy to watch them. Such fun.
I love that.
Susie, I got a question. Do you get cedar wax wings as well, coming to enjoy those?
Unfortunately, we have not seen them. We used to have, what was the tree we had? It belongs to the rose family.
We used to have a mountain ash,
and they came for that. But since our mountain ash died, we don't get the cedar waxwings anymore. Mm. I wish we would because they're one of my favorite birds. They're so beautiful.
Well, hopefully they come back because they like those as well. And yellow runt warblers, too, they like waxy berries. So you might be getting those, too. You getting those?
Not yet. We're waiting for
all right. They're coming. We're manifesting this for you right now, Susie. They're coming. Cedar waxwings are coming back, and the butterbuds.
Thank you for the call, Susie, and makes me want to plant some winter berries as well, just so we can bring them on in. Who's the worst nest maker in Wisconsin when it comes to birds, Dexter?
Oh, it's not even close. It's the mourning dove.
I knew it.
Number one on top of they do not care.
But how do those babies survive? It makes me. I mean, you think about these. I just don't know how they make it. How do we still have mourning doves with them being such poor builders?
Well, the beauty of it is the nest, right? They don't spend a ton of time in the nest building phase, but they'll take over your hanging plant, right? So you already basically made the nest for them. They're just like laying. I like to think of it as them laying a pallet. You know, when like you were a kid, you just like lay a bunch of blankets down and sleep on the floor. That's what the mourning dove is doing. And what's really cool, Lee, about them is they share sitting on the eggs 24/7. So they'll switch, right? So the dad will sit there and incubate the eggs, let mom go get food and nourish herself. And then they tag team off and on. And they are super attentive to their nest. So that's how they're successful. And they'll also lay multiple clutches of eggs, similar to what I told you about what the robins did this year. They may do 2-3 different clutches. So they are very adept, but they are so attentive to the eggs and their babies. And it's fascinating to watch because they get so big where they kind of just look like mom and dad, yeah. And then they're gone. You know?
Yeah. I don't know how they stay in some of those nests, but you explain it well. Poor builders, great parents.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce emailed to say that a growing population of black-necked stilts, a migratory shorebird, have established themselves at the Horicon Marsh National Wildlife Refuge. What would explain why they are here from their coastal range? Would it be climate change, Dexter?
Yes, a little bit of both, right?
Okay.
It's the changing in climates, but most of the time it's destruction of their habitat.
Mm.
So it forces them to explore a little further, and then they find this magical place, Horicon Marsh, which is 30,000 acres of freshwater cattail marsh, and they come here and they say, oh, I kind of like this, right? I kind of like this. It has food here. I can, you know, the thing about birds, too, is they come up and they migrate up here, and it's nesting season, and they're successful. They have a knack for returning to those areas when they know that they can ensure their young will be able to hatch and not only hatch, but survive and thrive and keep that bloodline aligned. So it's a little bit of both, you know, and I tell people all the time, I don't worry about one-off birds. You know, they call those vagrants. They pop up. You might see one, but I pay attention to patterns. And like you said, that pattern exists now. And every single year they're coming back. And they're coming back in bigger numbers, and it's just a beautiful place up there. I'll be up there in a couple of weeks taking some kids from the Goodman Community Center on a busted nature trip for the birding club. I'm really excited about that. Those little kids get up there, and I let them run wild, literally.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. It does make me wonder, though, Dexter, about the recent heat dome that we've had to persevere through, the smoke that's come down from the Canada and Minnesota wildfires, and what sort of effect that could be having on our bird population.
You know, they're pretty good with heat. I tell people all the time, you ever look around, you see birds, and they just got their mouth open like they're like a dog. You know, when a dog gets really hot, they pant.
Mm-hmm.
Birds do the same thing. So they're really adept at cooling themselves. But just like any of our wildlife, that smoke is getting into their lungs. It's not good, right? That's not a good thing. So it's definitely something we got to monitor. I've seen birds have to be rehabbed and different things like that. But at the same time, they are extremely, extremely resilient. And I noticed Saturday morning here in Madison, the air quality had cleared out for enough in the morning time where the skies were blue and it was really beautiful. And I just noticed the birds singing, you know, and it just kind of brought me so much joy. Like, they just dealt and endured with, you know, some of the worst air quality that we ever heard, ever had to endure here in our state. And they made it through, you know. That day before, I got to watch sandhill cranes literally doing their mating and courtship dance in front of my house. And it just really kind of puts things into perspective. I actually posted a video about it. It was crazy. One of the birds pulled a feather out, and then we're throwing the feather in the air and catching it and throwing it in the air and catching it and running up and down the grass, and they're bowing at each other and jumping in the air. It was fascinating, you know? So it really put it in perspective. Like, despite what we're going through, life has to go on. Like, we have to appreciate that and pay attention to what's going on. And the world is trying to tell us, you know, something is wrong. And I just think we need to listen a little more, or just like my grandpa said, pay attention.
Let's go back to your calls, questions, comments, and bird loving at 1-800-642-1234. We'll go to Richard next. Hi, Richard.
Hey, morning, Dexter. I've had a nice experience over the years with the bobolink population that migrate up. I have some hay fields on the farm that I leave in Timothy and Brome. And about 10 years ago, I noticed these birds coming up out of the tall grass. They had their little tuxedos on, and males had a bright yellow head, and I wondered what they were. And I looked them up, and I saw their bobolinks, and I guess they migrate up from Argentina, you know, and they would come up about middle of May, and then by the middle of July, they fledged everything out, and they headed back south, I guess. So,
and where are you located, Richard?
I live in Trumbull County, southern Trumbull County.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen these bobolinks in my backyard. Dexter?
Yeah, we get them. Man, they're like little transformers. I love them so much. It's one of my favorite birds. They're actually part of the blackbird family. Bobolinks are fantastic. You can actually see them at Pheasant Branch. Out in Middleton, you can see bobolinks out there. Really nice population of them at Horicon Marsh, just off the auto tour when you kind of first come in. You enter the auto tour, and you turn left. It's like the first parking lot. They nest every single year in that field there. So if anybody wants to see bobolinks, you're in the Madison area. Pheasant Branch is a really good one. Otherwise, that Horicon Marsh area is where I typically see them. They're fantastic. And they're so fun to watch, and their flight activity and the males during the mating season, they're so fun. They're so fun, and they sound almost mechanical and fake.
Birds aren't real. I've heard the theory, but I, you know, you describe each and every type of bird in a way that gives them their own sort of personality of species.
Mm-hmm. That's what happened when you sit with a bird and actually be with them, right?
These birds are so
different. Like, I tell people all the time, you can sit, and we talked about the robin. How about a northern cardinal? You watch each cardinal that you see, there's usually something different about each one. This one might be a little brighter. This one's song might be a little stronger. You know, it's just so fun to watch them and appreciate them as individual beings. I think once you do that, it humbles yourself, part of that puzzle that I talked about, where you realize that you're just a small piece, and respecting all of them in that way. That's how you keep your joy too. That's how you keep your joy. I tell people all the time, don't turn birds into, oh, that's just a robin. That's a robin. The bird is not a check mark on a list. You know, so many people turn them into these check marks on a list, and, you know, they get upset and they go home pouting when they don't see the one that they want to add the check mark to. Like, you're literally, the bird joy is seeping out of your body at that point, you know, and I'm like, slow down. Appreciate the 30 other birds you saw that day. Who cares if you miss one? I have this saying. I say, see you next time, homie. Right? Like, if I miss it, I get pump faked by a bird. I don't go crazy and be all sad. I just pay attention to the ones that I did see, and I just give you something to look forward to, you know? Give you something to look forward to.
Richard, I appreciate the call, and let's go to Elizabeth in Platteville next. Hi, Elizabeth.
I have a question about hummingbirds, because I normally have a ruby-throated hummingbird that comes every summer, and it didn't come this summer.
Hmm.
I have 48 blueberry bushes, and while I'm picking the blueberries, the hummingbird is usually right near my ear, and I can hear it hovering, and I look around, and sure enough, there it is.
But not this summer, huh? I feel like it may have been in my garden last weekend, as I was fortunate enough to see a couple hummingbirds, and I don't usually get that pleasure. What do you think's happening with Elizabeth and her blueberry bushes?
You know, what I will say is you still got time.
Okay.
Right? Maybe they're going to be around all summer. They're going to still be around through the fall. So just be patient. They'll show back up.
Is there a way you can entice them to show back up? Is there?
You know, she has the blueberry bushes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they love nectaring flowers. They love the red and bright orange ones. That really kind of brings them in. But you can also add nectar feeders to enhance the opportunity to bring them in. So, but having those native plant species there for them, that's what they prefer. I mean, that's going to be best for your yard in the long term and for the birds. But you can add some more to it to increase that likelihood, get more swings at the plate, per se.
When it comes to having a hummingbird feeder, what do we need to know? I remember from Bill Volker when he was on a couple weeks ago here, he was talking about the color red actually attracting hummingbirds and yep. being a plus. What sort of nectar do you want to use in your feeder?
You can just make it yourself.
Okay.
You know, just sugar and water, really simple. Just make sure that you're cleaning it on a regular basis and paying attention to that. So just make it yourself. It's a lot more efficient than going to buy the stuff in a store. It's better for the bird, easier for you as well.
Elizabeth, be patient, and thank you for calling. When it comes to our bird feeders, Dexter, should we be concerned about spreading diseases or viruses or anything like that? Is there hygiene that we should make sure we keep up with?
You always, if you're feeding birds, you always want to feed, you always want to clean your feeders. I recommend doing it at least every 2 weeks. One part bleach, 9 parts water, super easy, clean them out. It's going to prevent the possibility of spreading disease. Right now, there's nothing we need to worry about in Wisconsin at the moment. A couple years ago, we had bird flu issues, but we're not dealing with that right now. So anytime you're feeding birds, you want to make sure that you're constantly cleaning those feeders. The birds will stop coming to dirty feeders too. You know, you may get some here and there, some house sparrows or something, but eventually they're going to be like, nah, I'm good.
And my neighbor put out during the heat dome a bunch of bird baths.
That helps. Water, you know, when people are thinking about even the hummingbirds, right? If you want to attract more birds to your yard, water features are top of the list. Right. Not only just food for them, but having a water feature, and they have these little cool little solar powered like things that make the water drop and flow and make noise. That brings birds in like crazy. Not only do they want to bathe in it, but they need fresh water. So if you're struggling or you want to attract more birds, add in a simple water feature to your yard will magnify the amount of birds that come to your yard.
We are talking birds today with Dexter Patterson, the co-founder of the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin, the co-host of the Bird Joy podcast, and author of the book, Birds of the Great Lakes. And we welcome you to our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. What bird questions do you have for our expert and the guy who brings the joy of birds? What do you want to know about our bird population here and how we can better protect them? You can also email us, talk@WPR.org. And our conversation with Dexter continues next. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News. It's the Lee Rayburn Show, and our guest is Dexter Patterson, co-founder of the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin, the co-host of the Bird Joy podcast, and author of the book Birds of the Great Lakes. And we've got plenty of folks with plenty of questions and bird experiences. You can join us at talk@WPR.org or by calling 1-800-642-1234. And let's go right back to the phones, and we'll start with Chris in Manitowoc. Chris, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This has been really interesting. I've enjoyed it. My vision is somewhat compromised, so I've taken to bird listening, not bird watching. And I found the Merlin app, which a lot of people have, I'm sure. And I sit out on my porch at 6 in the morning, and I'm amazed at the number of birds that I can hear. And I'm beginning to memorize now the sounds. And so when I'm out and about, I'm much more conscious of bird sounds. And, oh, that's a robin. Oh, that's a red-winged blackbird. And it's great fun, and I've had some unusual. I had a nighthawk.
Oh.
I have had cedar wax wings.
There you go.
So, and chimney swift, and some other interesting, there's a red-eyed vireo that comes around a lot. So it's a great way to start learning about birds, and now I have to be able to find them with your eyes.
Oh, Chris, thank you
100%.
For sharing. Yeah. This Merlin app.
I call it birding by ear.
Yeah.
And that is, I always tell people, that's how I bird. You know, like if anybody is kind of familiar with the work that I do on my Wisco Birder Instagram, I make these videos called You Ready? Let's Go. And I will say, who wants to help me find the American robin? You ready? Let's go. Right. And we go find it. And typically people are like, well, how do you find the bird? I'm like, I hear it first and then I try to find it. Right. So it's always hearing it. And I tell people that all the time when they're baby birders, right? New birders, not just kids can be baby birders because adults are like big babies anyway. Right. So when people ask me when they first get started birding, I do exactly what Chris just talked about. I say, you know what? Download the Merlin app and just take a walk around your neighborhood. Just go around the block and you will be amazed at how many birds are always around you. That's the moment, right? That's the spark. And they may see a bird that they've never seen before. And that could be that one bird that lights that spark in them that makes them want to pay attention. So I love that. I love that you know, listening to what's around you, it builds that muscle memory. And what's cool about birds, they sound different in different seasons. And it really does help you see more birds. So one bird, one call at a time is what I say. It sounds like some like lawyer commercial or something. But
one bird,
it's
one call,
advice.
That's all.
One bird, one call at a time. You know, but, it's like,
but this Merlin app, can you explain what it does for folks who don't know? And would you recommend it as part of your arsenal as a birder?
100%. So it is created by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. I'm actually one of their ambassadors.
Oh.
So I highly recommend the Merlin Bird ID app. eBird is its counterpart, which allows you to keep your digital list of how many birds you've seen. It's also super helpful because you can see the birds that people are finding around you.
I can't
express that enough. When I first started birding, I couldn't believe how many natural areas surround us.
Yes.
Like I was kind of like, what? Like the whole time all this stuff been around me, I had no clue. eBird helps with that. It teaches you like different wildlife areas and parks and where people are seeing this species and that species. And now you know where to go. And then you can open up the Merlin Bird ID app. And what's cool about that app is, yes, it helps with you with your birding by ear because you can turn on the record function and it listens to the bird songs and calls that it's hearing around. Is it perfect? No, it's a tool, right? But it's pretty close. Like it's the best that's out there. And it's really pretty good at what it does. There are certain birds like catbirds and northern mockingbirds,
right?
And, you know, mimic birds that can fool Merlin and have you thinking you're hearing something that ain't really there, you know? Even blue jays, right? Blue jays can make red-shouldered hawk calls. So it's like some birds can trick you, but the cool thing about that is you turn on that record function and next thing you know, you see there's 14 bird species around you and you're like, what? Like where? I thought it was just robins. Right. So it is fantastic. It's a great, great learning tool. I'm a science communicator. I teach science communication at the University of Wisconsin. I love this as a science communication tool. You know, it really does help people. You also, you're a part of community science. So the data that you're collecting as you creating your list in eBird and you're submitting all this stuff, you're helping build the largest database of bird populations in the world, right? So it is fantastic to know that you're a part of something bigger than you, and that community science element really gets me fired up.
Yeah, I should mention you teach a course at the Department of Life Sciences Communication at UW-Madison. It's all part of all the things that you do, including the Bird Joy podcast and the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin. Chris, thank you so much for the call and bringing up that Merlin app along with the eBird. There is a couple of tools for your phone that you could use to help you watch and enjoy. Let's go to Wyatt in Wausau next. Hi, Wyatt.
Hi.
What do you have for us today?
I've been noticing a lot of red-winged blackbirds and common grackles in our neighbor's yard. What could attract a bunch of those birds?
Oh, great question, Wyatt. Thank you so much for calling. A bunch of red-winged blackbirds and grackles in the yard. What brings these birds to the yard?
You're starting to see, so they flock, right? They're flocking birds, and you're starting to see the adults and they're now juveniles on the move, right? They're feeding relentlessly. You're seeing them in big numbers right now. So that's what you're seeing. You're just kind of seeing the families grow, right? You're seeing the babies that hatched and were fed for a few weeks. Now they're flying around and their appetite has grown and the numbers have grown. So they're flocking birds, and that's what you're seeing. You're seeing those numbers grow since it's like the middle of summer now. Like mm-hmm. They're all getting ready, and they're blackbirds as a whole are some of the first birds to migrate back. So you'll see them at the end of the summer. They'll start taking off before a lot of the other birds as fall migration starts. So you're just kind of seeing them getting ready and getting their strength up for their journey to their wintering grounds.
Wyatt, thank you for the call. And I had an experience earlier this spring, and you talked about habitat loss, Dexter, of some trees in in Madison. You likely live near a lake, and I do. And some trees near the lake had been removed from a new homeowner. And as a result, we got a red-winged blackbird nest close to our home this year. And it was fun to watch. It felt like they were a little out of place. I don't usually get them nesting near me. But I did have the experience once with a hawk in the neighborhood when it seemed like all the other songbirds around came by to help protect this nest. I don't know if I'm anthropomorphizing this, but it felt like the songbirds were all sticking up for this one baby red-winged blackbird.
Mm. So what you saw is a phenomenon called mobbing. It actually is something that happens in nature quite a bit. You will see predators, a lot of times it's red-tailed hawks. They get picked on quite a bit. And the red-winged blackbirds will usually set it off. They don't play no games, I'll tell you. Like, they're so funny. But there are times when all the other birds around will see that same predator, and especially during nesting season, and they literally will join forces and mob a predator together. You see it with crows, crows will gang up and get on people. Next thing you know, you see other birds helping the crows go after the great horned owl or whatever it might be. So it is called mobbing, and it is territorial, and it is a defensive behavior for nesting birds.
The red-winged blackbird, pretty territorial itself with its nest.
Yeah.
As it was.
I tell people all the time, people were like, red-winged blackbirds are crazy. Lee, did you know that the male red-winged blackbird will nest with up to 9-10 different females, right? And he will defend every nest.
Whoa.
I tell people all the time, if you had 9 homes and 9 different partners and all those babies, you'd probably be a little crazy too.
Well, you'd certainly be tired at the end of the day, that's for
sure. So tired. So, yeah. So I just say, give them a little grace. You know, they're going through it, right? You know, you say they're going through some things.
Oh, man. Wyatt, I'm so glad you called because it reminded me of my red-winged blackbirds, and I'm so grateful to have them in our neighborhood, and I hope you enjoy them at yours. We'll go to Brett in East Madison next. Brett, hi.
Yeah, thankfully. Yeah, I've been dive-bombed by red-winged blackbirds.
Sure.
They will tag team you sometimes. It'll be like two or three coming. But good to wear a hat and while walking in the marsh and a helmet while biking. But, you sort of touched on climate change a little bit and habitat destruction. But with all this intense heat events we're having, obviously it's tough on people. But that's the number one killer of people of all weather. But how does it affect songbirds? And is it going to change the migration patterns and the number of songbirds that we have in Wisconsin?
Huh.
Yeah, I would say patterns, right? So yeah. If this is consistent and we're consistently in these heat domes, obviously it's going to impact all wildlife, including birds. The beauty about birds is their migration is more set to the position of the sun, which is pretty fascinating. So even though it may be warming or, you know, spring comes a little earlier because it feels a little warmer, they typically have this biological clock in them that is based off the position of the sun. So their migration patterns may slightly change here and there, a species here and there, but not dramatically, right? Because they are literally driven by, you know, magnetic forces in the earth, and they navigate differently, right? So they're sophisticated enough to understand it's time to go. But there are some birds that, oh wow, it's a little warm and mm-hmm. it's still November and we haven't had, you know, any sun or whatever, you know, no snow yet, right? It's still pretty warm. There may be some birds that hang out a little longer, or there may be some birds that take off a little earlier. So to answer his question, yes, but also no, right? I think they are very resilient to the point, like, as long as they're not losing their homes and completely having their habitat destroyed, they are still going to be in this routine of their migration patterns that are set to the sun and kind of biologically built into them.
So what are the greatest threats to our bird population other than loss of habitat as you see it, Dexter?
It's us. Right. Mm. Our human beings, we always seem like we think we know best. And usually when we insert ourselves and try to fix situations, we make it worse. Like Mother Nature knows exactly what's going on. And I think we need to trust that. I think a lot of times when we intervene and we try to do things, you see that happening where they were calling all these barred owls out west and different things. Right. Because they're worried about what the barred owl is going to do to the other owls. And now you're disrupting like the forces of nature. And once we start to do that, we could tilt the balance the wrong way, thinking that we're doing something good. So obviously that habit, who's destroying the habitats? We are. Who's polluting their habitats? We are. So we have to be better. We have to be accountable. We have to have that environmental awareness and understanding that we need to do our part, and we need to protect not only the birds, but their habitats, because now, you know, it's not just the birds, it's the insects, it's all the other things, right? The wildflowers, everything that we destroy has a domino effect. So it's us. Like, we just have to take more responsibility and realize we are not the gatekeeper of all things. We are not the top of the pyramid and the most important. We are just part of it.
We're just connected to it. And the yeah. birds can be the key that can help unlock that, at least perspective on how we're all interrelated in some ways. But you mentioned in the barred owl, and it made me think, I don't often hear of in terms of invasive species and birds. Is that really a thing, Dexter? Are there invasive bird species?
100%. You know, when you think about some of the birds that we have that are common, like the European starling, for example, that's an invasive bird that is now dominating in our country. So, and all over the world. So there are invasive birds as well. The house sparrow, you know, like there are a lot of different birds that were introduced here that have taken off. You know, and there, that's a touchy subject for some people, You know, for me, I think the European starling is absolutely beautiful. I tell people when you pay attention, you start to notice different things. If you look very closely at a European starling, you'll notice little hearts in their plumage. They are actually, it's adorable, right? And once you see it, you can't unsee it. It's so funny. People are like, oh my goodness, I've never even noticed that. Yeah, you got to pay attention. They're also mimics and just beautiful birds, but they are invasive. And they can wreak havoc. They can take over nests. They can do a lot of different things, similar to the house sparrows. And you're thinking about our native birds and thrushes related to the robin, the eastern bluebird. Their nests get taken over by house sparrows all the time.
Yeah.
Right. So it's it is this balance of respecting nature and appreciating them, but also understanding that there are some consequences and there are invasive birds that cause issues.
Those house sparrows seem like bullies to me.
They are. You know, they're pretty aggressive. But it is so wild, though. If you actually just take the emotions out of it and watch how they thrive.
Yeah.
And look where they will find any nook and cranny. They will make it happen. They will make sure that they have, like, it is actually fascinating.
Hey, right? When you're that tiny, you kind of have to be tough.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, also, I wanted to ask about free roaming cats, and it's something that I see in my neighborhood, and I'm wondering how a birder like yourself sees it, Dexter.
It breaks my heart all the time. And no, that's a simple thing. When I talk about it's us, it is literally us. The science is clear. The research is clear. Cats are the number one killers in the world, right? They kill more wildlife than anything on the planet outside of us human beings. So, like, keep them inside. Like, it's just not fair. And the sad thing about cats, and I know you love your pets, people. They are your family. I understand it. But you got to understand, like, they kill for fun. Like, they don't even kill to, like, survive or eat. Like, they just want to kill something because it's fun. Like, it just doesn't make sense. They are the number one killers of songbirds in the world, and it's heartbreaking because people do it all the time. Like, it's just no big deal, you know, and it is. Yeah. Don't get me started with that.
Yeah. Either put them on a leash or get them in a nice cart.
Keep them inside.
Stroller, or yeah, don't let them out at all. I understand that. And yeah, I've seen it myself. Let's go to Mary in Lebanon next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I've been a bird watcher many years. My mother got me interested when I was in 4-H. And I can remember going we went over at Fond du Lac County, and there was a woods, and then I saw my first rose-breasted grosbeak. And then there were some neighbors that had a nice woods, and that was where I saw other birds too. But I feed all the time. I have a woodpecker that comes and pecks on my house because he likes to peck. And I hang out seed cakes. I mean, I am buying bird seed all year round, and I have a hummingbird, and I plant flowers for the hummingbird. And I have to go out soon now and put on fresh sugar water in this heat. I found a shady spot. And anyway, the other day when I put out the fresh sugar water, didn't I see the hummingbird come right away to get a drink?
I've actually seen a story where the hummingbird feeder was empty and the hummingbird approached a person and just sat there and waited for them expectedly. Mary, I love how you filled your world with birds, and it's by the, you know, sort of by the yard you created. Thank you.
I live in the floodplain of the Rock River, and we have woods and all sorts of birds around. My husband kept track, and we have close to 50 different species that we see here.
Wow, Mary.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I also want to get to it. Thank you for calling, Mary. Lorraine in Portage emailed to say listeners might enjoy the bird art exhibit currently in Prairie du Sac at the River Arts Center now until August 8th. Paintings of birds by Lorraine and another artist, Roberta Condon, are on display there. And yes, there are paintings of robins, too. We've talked a lot about robins today. Bill in Oregon emailed to say that for him, birding started as an enjoyable excuse to be outside. Any excuse will do. It has evolved into a favorite reason for travel. It has taken Bill all over Wisconsin and all over the world and introduced him to a lot of fun and interesting people. How far has birding taken you, Dexter?
You know, I love that. I love that he said that, because I tell people all the time what I love most about birds. And I say, it's not about the birds. And people are like, what do you mean? You're the bird guy. It has to be about the birds. It's the community. I can't believe, like, I've met some of the most just wonderful people out in the wild on the trail via birding. Some of my best friends, some of the just nicest people in the world that fill me with so much joy. So for me, it's that community. I remember, fun story, the furthest I've gone in regards to birding is the Bahamas.
Oh.
And I remember going down there, and I tell people this story, and it's so funny because I saw so many things I'd never seen before, but the one bird that I remember most is the great blue heron that I saw down there. And people are like, what? You see those in Wisconsin? I said, exactly. I said, exactly. That's why it blew my mind. I'm like, dude, I could have saw you in Madison, Wisconsin, and now here you are hanging out with me in the Bahamas, and you flew down here yourself, and then you're going to fly all the way back, right? So, like, that just seeing that just blew my mind. Like, migration of birds is one of the most fascinating endeavors and things and acts that you could ever learn about or witness. And I just remember just being in awe of this great blue heron chilling on the beach with me as I see little ghost crabs running around and stuff. And I'm like, there's a great blue heron in the Bahamas, and he might fly back with on his own. So that's my furthest away birding story.
But it also makes me think of you dreaming of flying, not being flying as Superman, but flying with bird
as
wings.
As a bird.
Yeah. From wings to the brain, what do you think when you hear people say bird brain? Because the more I learn about birds, the smarter they seem to me.
Oh, they're fantastic. You know, you start to appreciate how resilient they are. Like I mentioned, migration, and you talk about some of the birds, like some of the nest building hummingbirds. Oh my, their nest? Oh my, right? It's like a little piece of art. I'm a self-proclaimed bird nerd. Like I let that bird nerd flag fly. So if you want to say bird brain, you want to say bird nerd, I embrace it fully because it is just, it changed my life. And I see that it's changing other people's lives. I saw that, you know, during the pandemic, you saw a lot of people reconnecting with nature because it was really wasn't a lot of other things to do at that time.
Sure.
Birding exploded. You know, people were buying field guides. They're getting binoculars. They're exploring the natural areas around them. And I tell people all the time, ever since then, birding has been having a moment. Yeah. And it is just like cool now. Like young people are birding now. Like it's a thing. It is a thing, but it really isn't just about the birds. It is reconnecting with nature as a whole because, you know, I've been birding and I've seen minks. I've seen deer. Right. I see rabbits. I've seen salamanders and oh my, right? Like, it's just like you start seeing all this different stuff and you're just like, holy cow, the world is beautiful.
But it also strikes me, Dexter, as part of the community of birders, is that is the sort of headspace that you are invited to be a part of, that the world is beautiful. You are a part of it, as is everything around you. And to talk to a birder is sort of being able to get that sort of insight and an invitation to join it.
Yeah, birding is for everyone, even you. And I tell people the birding community, right? This was the inspiration for me to create our birding club was, you know, I think the birding community should reflect the birds we all love.
Mm.
If you think about birds, Lee, they're of all different shapes,
yes,
colors and sizes and abilities. Like that's people, right? That is people. And that's when you really start to see the connection. We are birds. Birds are us. We are all in a community together. And that's what you see. Like when people look at the pictures from our events for our birding club, you see birds, you see people of all walks of life. You see people of all different colors, shapes, sizes, and abilities. And that's what it's about. That is what community is about, is making sure that everybody, no matter who they are, who they love, their abilities or disabilities, it doesn't matter. And I always tell people, I will do whatever I have to do for even one person to make sure that they can enjoy birds with us when they come, because that's how you build community, by pouring into each and every one of them.
Zen and the Art of Birding. Dexter Patterson, thank you so much for this enjoyable hour. I look forward to meeting up with you again soon.
I appreciate you, Lee.
Dexter is a co-founder of the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin, the co-host of the Bird Joy podcast, author of The Birds of the Great Lakes, and also a teacher at the Department of Life Sciences Communication at UW-Madison. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News.